Blog Talk Radio.
How much is too much?
Hit me again.
Do you know when to say when?
Pelosi's coming over. Make it a double.
Studies show that those who overindulge exhibit signs of arrogance.
I don't count my drinks because I'm the president.
Overconfidence.
This is the day we stop the seas from rising. Or was it yesterday?
The inability to think clearly on one's own.
Where's my teleprompter? I gotta talk to those kindergarten kids.
You think you're funny, but no one else does.
Let's give the Dalai Lama a set of cufflinks and send him out the back door.
Mr. President, let's don't do that.
And a profound inability to listen to others.
Lama's funny. You don't know funny.
If a friend, relative, or leader of the free world exhibits any of these warning signs, don't let them drive, operate heavy machinery, or sign any important documents.
Where's that health care bill?
And consider moderating their alcohol intake before it's too late. Do you know how much? What college do you dream of sending your kids to? Yale, Harvard, Princeton?
Forget it. Those are the universities of yesteryear. The school of the future is COC.
Community Organizer College.
I'm a graduate, and I just took control of General Motors. And now I'm thinking of taking over Chrysler, too. Maybe. Or selling it to an Italian bicycle company.
Want your kids to run a giant company or even an entire industry like healthcare, banking, or insurance? Enroll him or her at COC, Community Organizer College.
You want your darlings to have trillions of dollars of money to spread around? Apply to Community Organizer College. Our teachings are based on a major breakthrough in education. It's not what you know, it's what people think you know.
At COC, Community Organizer College, we don't waste time teaching English, history, math, science, or business management.
We teach cool. We teach pompous. We teach teleprompter, doublespeak, seducing the media.
Community Organizer College.
Where your kids can learn to run a company or a country. Who knows? Maybe the entire planet.
Community Organizer College. Capacity is limited. Better act now. For an application, dial 1-800-ACORN-COC.
It's not what you know. It's what people think you know.
Excellence in Broadcasting presents Liberals of Genius.
Liberals of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. President of the United States.
President of the United States.
You single-handedly managed to choke all the life out of the world's greatest economy in record time.
10% unemployment.
No one else could have apologized more, spent more, or built a rat maze healthcare system from hell that only the IRS could love.
What were you thinking?
Thanks to you, FDR will be known as a conservative, Carter will look presidential, and Joseph Stalin won't seem like such a bad guy.
Joe was misunderstood.
So crack open a good book, sit on your butt, and help your buddies with a snowball's chance in November.
Mr. President, the one we were waiting for.
Oh, yep. We are back here once again. It has been an interesting weekend, to say the very least. A very interesting weekend. I'm glad that I have some of my closest friends here with me to share the beginning of the week with. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones of the Dr. C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Today's date, November 21st, 2011, AD. Beautiful old town, Alexandria, Virginia. Looking out the window of my palatial villa. Looking out the window of the townhouse, looking across at the Watergate Hotel across the Potomac over in Washington, D.C. It's a beautiful night tonight. Planes fly over my head continuously headed for Ronald Reagan Airport. However, it's a beautiful sound. It's the sound of freedom. Speaking of freedom, I have a list of the top 100 statistics about the collapse of the economy that every American voter should know. But before we get into that, the big news tonight is that the super committee has failed to reach an agreement, and the President of the United States of America, Barack Hussein Obama, has vowed to veto any bill that comes before him that will gut those cuts. And frankly, this may come as a shock to some of my listeners, but I agree with him. Who are these idiots who were first dumb enough to agree to putting together a super committee, within the framework of the Constitution? Now, the Constitution calls for House of Representatives, the Senate, president, basically the three branches of government. And somehow, over the course of the last year, we managed to have 3+ branches of government. So we have the House, we have the presidency, we have the judicial. And now we have a entity within the Congress, a super Congress, voting on matters of fiscal prudence or imprudence. How is it that we have that? Is it even constitutional to have a super committee, a group of senators or congressmen from one side of the aisle to the other deciding an issue? That's not the way the framework, the way the founding fathers set things up. So one has to wonder whether or not this whole thing is even constitutional. And why would the Republicans even agree to such a thing? The Republicans agreed that if the one-part Democrat, the one-part Democrat, the one-part conservative didn't agree on a budget plan, then certain fiscal cuts would kick in. Well, they haven't agreed. Now these cuts have kicked in. My question is, why even agree to such a thing? These types of cuts that have been triggered will gut the U.S. military and a wealth of social programs. I believe that even though our president is an idiot, he's not stupid. So now we're going to have a situation where if these automatic triggers aren't cut off, that we're basically going to have a financial meltdown. It's already been suggested strongly that we'll be downgraded once again, that the stock market will crash, that Armageddon will ensue. It's already been foretold. The Republicans have once again put their foots up their own asses by agreeing to the super committee to begin with, and then just dumb enough to agree to these insane triggers. And now the president has called everyone's bluff by saying that he will not veto any cuts to the triggers. This is a colossal mess. The only thing that we can hope for, our only hope, is that Barack Obama is not here. He is not in the White House to see these triggers go into place, because they're not slated to kick in until, yes, of course, after the 2012 elections, a full 2 to 3 months after. So hopefully he'll be gone. The new president will come in, and he will put a stop to this madness. In fact, Barack Obama is so idiotic, but not stupid, but dumb and idiotic and stupid, because pretty much by saying that he will veto any cuts to the super committee's failure to these triggers, that's going to be a sticking point for his one more nail in his reelection coffin. Because there are those who are in the middle, those independents who don't want to see our military gutted and a wealth of social programs go to crap. So any Republican presidential candidate who comes out in favor of repealing those triggers will most likely get a whole block of voters that otherwise would have been President Obama's had he just said that he would not agree to the triggers. Well, we'll just have to wait and find out. In the meantime, it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting indeed. There, I want to let my listening audience know that I have no longer be associated with Wahoo Media. I was Wahoo's CFO, and we had a disagreement of management styles and operating styles, and so I decided that it's best that I just continue on my own and produce my own show, and I'll most likely, you know, stream my own show from my website and, you know, do some of the things that they were going to do with their company, but just with me alone. And I wish Wahoo Media much success. You know, Jermaine is a great guy, and I have nothing but the best things to say about him. GGT is who I'm speaking of. And his co-host, Robert, great guys, but just didn't seem like it was gonna work out in the end. So I wish those guys great success, and we'll just go back to being the C. Robert Jones Situation Report all by myself. Oh, yeah. And, hey, why not? Now, we're going to take a short break, and then we will come back, and then we will deal with some of these issues. Some of the issues with regard to the collapse of this, the potential collapse of our economy. And it's a hard thing to really talk about. It really is. But I don't think that we're really going to have much of a choice. So we'll be right back. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Barack Obama promised us a better economy, but he gave us bigger government, higher taxes, and skyrocketing debt. 2.5 million jobs lost, largest deficit in history, $14.3 trillion national debt. The picture is clear.
Nobody's looking to raise taxes right now. We're talking about potentially 2013.
We can't afford four more years of Barack Obama. Help America change direction. The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it, and I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of the Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet, or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush, then Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question Atlas Shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
you decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value, but you've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
All right, we are back. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Did anyone within the hearing of the sound of my voice see the movie Atlas Shrugged? I got a copy here on Blu-ray, and I bought a stack for some of my closest friends as stocking stuffers. I like the movie. The beginning, I was very pleased to note that a lot of the verbiage from the movie, a lot of the lines from the movie came right out of the book, which is what I really appreciate that. But the movie was very much anticlimactic because there are three parts to the movie, and I only saw the part one. I mean, the book's pretty long, so to watch the movie and only see, you know, a small segment of what the book speaks to in movie form, because you can't have complete dialogue from the book to the movie. The movie would be like 5 or 6 hours long, maybe longer than that. But, you know, what I saw was very much encouraging. I'm looking forward to part two. If you have the time and the means, I recommend going out and getting the Blu-ray copy of Atlas Shrugged, the movie. Pretty good. Oh, and if you haven't read the book, I highly recommend the audiobook version of Atlas Shrugged. Now, I'm giving them plugs. I'm getting no money for that. I'm just letting you know that these are really cool, great things, and very informative. So, you know, if you want to do that, you go right ahead. But in the meantime, the U.S. economy is dying. It's dying. It's flatlining. I mean, seriously. And most American voters have no idea why it's happening. Unfortunately, the mainstream media and most of our politicians are not telling the truth about the collapse of the economy, not at all. In fact, they're like Chicken Little. They're like, they're more so like, hey, it's all good. Everything's going great. All we need to do is tax the rich more. You know, we need to tax the rich more and maybe cut a little spending, but certainly tax those wealthy people more. Never mind the immortal mathematics, if you will, which I took from the movie Hell on Wheels, the series Hell on Wheels, the latest episode. Yeah. The immortal mathematics are that if you tax 100% of every wealthy person in America, wouldn't make a dent in our economic imbalance, the hole that we've dug for ourselves over the last 40 years. Doesn't matter. It's all about the perceived idea of fairness. Unfortunately, though, the mainstream media and most of our politicians are not telling the truth. This generation was handed the keys to the greatest economic machine that the world has ever seen. And we've completely wrecked it. Remember when there were steel mills? I mean, I'm from Chicago, not from Pennsylvania, the pretty much the birthplace of the modern steel mill. But Chicago, we had steel mills where men could go to work and earn a really great living and live in suburban Chicago very comfortably. The steel mills have all but disappeared due to what? Regulations. Regulations on the air and the water and, yeah, all of that, which is important. But it's also cost an awful lot of jobs and ruined the economy. I mean, it's one thing to want to protect our basic air, water supply, things we need to live and breathe. But when you get to the point where you can't farm in a certain area because of a lizard, or like what my guy Rush Limbaugh reported on about 15 years ago, where farmers couldn't farm their land in areas of California because a rat lived there, a specific kind of rat, a rodent. And that rodent was judged to be on the verge of extinction. And so farmers were not allowed to farm their own land for fear that that rat would become extinct. Thing like that. So given that we are the generation that was handed the keys to the greatest economy, the greatest economic machine, we have responsibility for completely wrecking it. Decades upon decades of incredibly foolish decisions, such as the rat in the farmland. A rat. It's been 15 years, and I still can't get over that one. Foolishness. Foolish decisions that have left us drowning in an ocean of corruption, greed, and bad debt. Thousands of businesses and millions of jobs have left the country, and poverty is exploding from coast to coast. We're literally becoming a joke to the rest of the world, with our president bowing and scraping and begging and apologizing for everything. Thousands of businesses and millions of jobs gone. It's absolutely imperative that we educate America about what's happening. With the 2012 elections fast approaching, and until the American people truly understand the problems that are facing us, we will wind up reelecting President Barack Obama, and he will finish us off, the country. The following are the top 100 statistics about the collapse of the economy that every American voter should know, and we're not going to go through all 100, certainly not today. But number 100, a staggering 48.5% of all Americans live in a household that received some form of government benefits. Back in 1983, that number was below 30%. And here's the reason why. You know, I come from Chicago. And in Chicago, we had what's called, we had at one point what's called, what were called welfare queens. Now, that is one of those politically incorrect terms that should not be used. But back before the welfare queens took place, and welfare queens are women who mostly, I only know the, black, I can't speak to any other race of folks, black folks, who the women would come from a generation of women who had babies out of wedlock and who the only way that they could see to survive was to have more and more children. It doesn't matter who the guy was with, because for each child, a woman would be paid by the government upwards of $1,600 a month per child. And the government would simply give them the money. It didn't matter. You had the child, you filed a claim, like if you had a car accident, and a couple of months later, once you produced a birth certificate, you'd start getting about $1,600. So if you had seven children, well, you do the math. 5, 4, 3, whatever. Plus, you got to live in public housing, which would cost you about $60 a month to live. And if you had a three-bedroom dwelling in public housing, well, you were living large. It would cost you, $75, $80 a month, not counting, lights. Electricity, because it's really all you had to pay was electricity, because everything was electric. Well, back in the 50s and the 60s, there wasn't this thing called political correctness. Back then, a social worker would come to the house, he'd look underneath the beds, or she, check the closets for any sign of a man, or any sign of any extra income. And if they found that you had extra income or a man coming in, then they would wonder, why isn't this man contributing to the household? And there was a chance that if you couldn't come up with a good answer, that you were going to get your benefits cut, if not cut completely. They were very, very strict. Oh, they'd come to your house almost like probation or parole officers. They'd come without warning. They have access to your place. You had to let them in. You had to let them look around. They were pretty much probation officers. Now, that's perceived as an injustice. That's perceived as a violation of rights. So you can pretty much do whatever you want. You still got paid by the government. So 48.5% of all American households today take advantage of this political correctness in not verifying whether or not you're employable, whether or not you've been looking for work, etc. That's why back in 1983, the number was below 30%. And number 99, during the Obama administration, the U.S. government has accumulated more debt than it did from the time George Washington took office to the time that Bill Clinton took office. Since Barack Obama was sworn in, the share of the national debt per household has increased by $35,835. The U.S. national debt has increased by an average of more than $4 billion per day since the beginning of the Obama administration. It's been projected that the U.S. national debt will hit 344% of GDP by the year 2050, if we continue on this course. The Congressional Budget Office has projected that the U.S. government debt held by the public will reach a staggering 716% of GDP by 2080. Most of us won't be here, but our grandchildren will be. What do we do about this? Is there anything to be done? We need to start electing fiscal leadership. Everybody wants a handout. Everybody wants something for nothing. I do too. I'll be honest with you. I want something for nothing. But wanting and taking, well, they're two different things. I wanted those Bose 501, those Bose headsets, those noise-canceling headsets over at Best Buy earlier today. I wanted those back, but I didn't take them. Wanting and taking is something altogether. If someone had offered me those Bose headsets, I probably would have said, hey, thank you, and walked out. Here's the thing, folks. This is serious business. America is on the verge of a serious collapse. What is there to do about it? When U.S. households now receive more income from the U.S. government than they are paying to the government in taxes, what is there to do? If you can believe it, one out of every seven Americans has at least 10 credit cards. I have none. I use debit card. According to the Bureau of Economic Analysis, healthcare costs amounted to just 9.5% of all personal consumption back in 1980. Today, they account for approximately 16.3%. The cost of a health insurance policy for the average American family rose by a whopping 9% last year alone. And according to a report put out by the Kaiser Family Foundation and the Health Research and Educational Trust, the average family health insurance policy now costs over $15,000 a year. One study found that approximately 41% of working-age Americans either have had medical bill problems or are currently paying off medical debt. An all-time record, 49.9 million Americans do not have any health insurance at all at this point. And the percentage of Americans covered by employer-based health plans have fallen for 11 years in a row. According to a report published in the National Journal of Medicine, medical bills are a major factor in more than 60% of personal bankruptcies here in the United States. Of those bankruptcies that were caused by medical bills, approximately 75% of them involved individuals that actually did have health insurance. An average yearly tuition at an American private university is now up to $27,932. And we can go on and on and on, and so we shall. After we take this quick break, you're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We'll be right back.
How many men ever went to a barbecue too and would let one man take off the table what's intended for 9/10 of the people to eat? The only way you'll ever be able to feed the balance of the people is to make that man come back and bring back some of that grub he ain't got no business with. Now, how are you going to feed the balance of the people? What's Morgan and Baruch and Rockefeller and Mellon going to do with all that grub? They can't eat it. They can't wear the clothes. They can't live in the house. But when they've got everything on the God's living earth that they can eat and they can wear and they can live in, and all that their children can live in and wear and eat and all their children's children can use, then we got to call Mr. Morgan and Mr. Mellon and Mr. Rockefeller back and say, come back here. Put that stuff back on this table here that you took away from here that you don't need. Leave something else for the American people to consume.
In recent years, the conservatives have gradually come to a dim realization of the weakness in their position, of the philosophical flaws that had to be corrected. But the means by which they are attempting to correct it are worse than the original weakness. There are three interrelated arguments used by today's conservatives to justify capitalism, which can best be designated as the argument from faith, the argument from tradition, the argument from depravity. Sensing their need of a moral base, many conservatives decided to choose religion as their moral justification. They are claiming that freedom, capitalism, and America are based on faith in God. Politically, such a claim contradicts the fundamental principles of the United States. In America, religion is a private matter and must not be brought into political issues. Intellectually, to rest one's case on faith is to concede that reason is on the side of one's enemies, to concede that there are no rational arguments to support the ideas which created this country, no rational justification for freedom, justice, property, individual rights, and they can be accepted only on faith. Consider the implications of that attempt. While the communists are claiming that they are the champions of reason and science, the conservatives concede it and retreat into the realm of mysticism, into another world, surrendering this world to communism. It is the kind of victories that communist irrational ideology could never have won on its own merits. Now consider a second argument. The attempt to justify capitalism on the ground of tradition. Some people declare that to be a conservative means to uphold the status quo, the given, the established, regardless.
And you're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Call in numbers 347-884-8500. The United States finds itself at a crossroads right now, facing a stark reality that it can no longer ignore or leave to future generations. We're presently on an inevitable path toward inevitable failure and second-class status. It all started 48 years ago. We now can see that. The distance America has traveled toward this road over the past 48 years, a comparatively short period of time within the historical life of a nation. And it's astounding. It's amazing. It's frightful. All of us, when we approach the twilight of our years, have one event or a year that is indelibly etched in our memory. For me, it was the year 1979. I was among a great many who stood in front of the Lincoln Memorial, and I listened to a reenactment of Martin Luther King deliver his I Have a Dream speech. And to this day, even though I wasn't there at the original event, I can still hear his voice and words as they remain in the forefront of my memory. Never mind that he plagiarized most of that speech from a congressman who delivered the very same speech the year before to Congress. A as a technicality. But the most profound and compelling experience during my young years one morning I stood along Connecticut Avenue, less than a block from St. Matthew's Cathedral. And I realized that Connecticut Avenue and St. Matthew's Cathedral was where my father said that he was standing, holding a young me in his arms as he witnessed the funeral of President John F. Kennedy. I stood there and I wondered about the funeral procession of the young president. I saw myself as I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed at that time with a sense of dread and apprehension as I asked myself the question, what course would a country that only so many years before had generously and with open arms welcomed so many to its shores? What happened to that country? In short order, America has turned dramatically to the left, following the path of the socialist democracies of Europe. War was forced upon the American people and mismanaged by its leaders. Vietnam, Korea. They'd spawned massive unrest, easily exploited by the radical elements in this country, thus allowing the ideology to masticize within the American society. Less than 5 years after Martin's unforgettable speech at the Lincoln Memorial, Martin Luther King lay dying on the balcony of a Memphis motel, not hotel, motel, the victim of an assassin's bullet. The civil rights movement, so vital to the renewal of the nation's ideals, was soon hijacked by those who traffic in either violence or racial intimidation. I'm talking about you, Jesse. I'm talking about Jesse and Al and so many others. President Lyndon Johnson shamelessly exploited the nation's shock over the death of the youthful President Kennedy, steered the nation onto a course of massive government intervention into the day-to-day lives of Americans and unbridled social spending. For example, by his war on poverty, the passage of Medicare, and the expanded welfare program. The inexorable transfer of unbridled power to the Washington bureaucrats and the political expedience of unsustainable promises to the American people in exchange for their votes, of course. Over the past 48 years, the Democrats had become the unabashed and unbalanced promoters of these insane policies, while the Republican establishment, with a few exceptions, like my man Ronald Reagan, have become the enablers. The United States is now on the verge of national bankruptcy, accelerated dramatically over the past 3 years by Barack Obama. The Democrats will blame the Republicans. The Republicans will blame the Democrats. But who's at fault? Us. We are at fault. not the Democrat Party, not the Republican Party, not even President Barack Hussein Obama. Yes, you heard me say it. It's us. It's us, the American people. We did it. We elected a guy who sounds good. He looks pretty good in his suit. He speaks well, but only because he has a teleprompter in front of him to tell him what to say. He appears to be intelligent. He's a con artist. He's an empty suit. The classic pigeon drop was portrayed on us by this charlatan. This wannabe. Is it his fault? No. It's the fault of the American people. It's the fault of Democrats. It's the fault of the independents. In essence, it's America's fault. We elected these people. We put them in office. They didn't take power. They didn't seize power. We elected them. They could not be who they are and what they are without us putting them where they are. We gave them power and we refuse to take it away because we're being given something in return. We're being fought and paid for. Our votes. Vote for me and I'll do something for you. Not vote for me and I'll we'll work together to make this country a better place. No, vote for me and I'll do something for you. I'll do something for your family. Your taxes will be lower or your taxes will be higher. Or we'll make sure that it's affordable for your kids to go to college. Never mind that somehow that will contribute to a staggering debt and put our country at risk of collapse. Never mind that. I'll do something for you. Beach Bum writes in the chat room, LBJ did the real damage after the Kennedys moved on. The one thing I respect about the crude dog ear pulling LBJ is he had the sense to quit the job he was horrible at, even though foolish Americans would have voted him back in. No doubt. Beach Bum is correct. At least Johnson had the basic decency and foundation and love for this country. But most Texans do. What did you think about NASCAR, Melinda writes in the chat room. Well, we'll get a little off topic, sure. We've got a few minutes left. I am so pleased. But what could one expect from the heartland of America? True American, patriots all. Of course they're going to boo the first lady and send her packing. Of course. I did not expect anything less. I simply, you know what, it made me feel good because not everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid. Not everybody's drinking the Kool-Aid. I have a good friend, Leslie Cathy. Speaking of Kool-Aid, she is one of the few survivors of the Jonestown massacre with the Reverend Jim Jones. She did not drink the Kool-Aid, and she's here today. Folks in the heartland of America, those NASCAR fans, did not drink the Kool-Aid. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and plug Leslie's book, Slavery of Faith. Get yourself a copy. She is one of a handful of survivors of the Jonestown, Guyana massacre, and I call it a massacre. Slavery of Faith. Pick up a copy, if you will. Leslie Cathy. But hey, the NASCAR folks, they made me proud. Even now, I'm smiling just thinking about what Melinda wrote in the chat room. Because NASCAR fans, patriots, true believers in the American dream, and American exceptionalism spoke. They spoke. Now, what I'd really like to see, Melinda and Beach Bum, is for this hoedown that's going to go down in the White House in the coming weeks, where the Obamas are inviting country artists to come and do their thing. I would really love for nobody to show. Just don't show up. You know, that would be great to have a country event in the White House trying to get some votes, some much needed votes from North Carolina, South Carolina, because dude has lost. He's lost North Carolina. He's lost South Carolina. He's lost Virginia. He's lost Alabama. He's lost Mississippi. So he sends that hideous troll of a wife. She is butt-ass ugly, to a NASCAR event, knowing fully damn well that she's from Chicago, Illinois. She is a native of Chicago. And we don't have any NASCAR stuff going on in Chicago. Not even the country's country redneck in Chicago is a NASCAR fan. I'm just keeping it real. We don't know anything about that stuff. The only thing we know about NASCAR in Chicago is that movie Stroker Ace. I don't even think I said it right. So she's a Chicago girl going to hang out with NASCAR folks. I became a fan of NASCAR because of my ties to the Marine Corps. Most of the duty stations that I was stationed at were in the South. I couldn't help become a NASCAR fan. And I was country when country wasn't cool. But it was out of necessity. It was part of the environment. Hey, one of my favorite country songs is Teddy Bear. And Roses for Mama. I still weep when I hear those two. C.W. McCall, Convoy, all of that. But that was out of the fact that I was in an environment that way. The hideous troll, that woman who is, for the first time in her life, proud of her country, at a NASCAR event, everybody saw through it. Everybody did. The only folks who could be expected to show up at the hoedown in the White House coming up would be the Dixie Chicks. In fact, are the Dixie Chicks even still around? Because after that George Bush debacle and a few other really stupid things, they kind of fell off the map. Hey, but we have gotten far afield. The show is just about over. Oh, my God. I've got like 90 seconds, a minute left, and I got off into the whole thing with Melinda and the NASCAR thing, and I'm loving it. But we are out of time. So I want to thank you all for listening. And have a great evening, and we'll talk tomorrow. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. We got to keep the devil way down in the hole. God bless you. Good night.
Walk to the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury. Jesus' hand, we'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Down in the hole. You gotta help me keep the devil.